Now we're going to talk about how the city of Seattle surveils. The Seattle Police Department uses surveillance technology, cameras, software, and the city just passed a law giving the public more say about that technology. The law was supported by the ACLU of Washington, and in the studio is the group's technology director, Shankar Narayan. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What is your evidence that the public ought to sign off on police surveillance technology? Is there a problem already?
Well, we have certainly seen these kinds of powerful surveillance technologies misused elsewhere when they were implemented without community input. I'll give you just one example. So automated license plate readers, what are commonly known as ALPRs, this is a technology that's often used for parking enforcement. It's used, for example, for tolling purposes in Washington state. In New York City, they had these devices, and they used them for several years to surveil worshipers coming to and from mosques. Now, there was no public debate about this, but certainly when the Muslim community heard about it, they were unhappy about it. They weren't sure where the data was going, what it was going to be used for, whether it could be used to target individuals who were worshiping at that mosque. So that's just one example. You know, there are clear benefits to ALPR technology. It's not that we're saying it should be taken off the table entirely, but when it's implemented, it shouldn't just be law enforcement that makes those decisions. It should be the community and their representatives having a chance to weigh in and saying, here are uses that are good and beneficial, where we get some public safety benefit, and here perhaps are uses that we would like to take off the table because they're not in line with our values.
And this is not to this new law, this is not the people voting on surveillance technologies. This is just the city council taking a look at only new technologies or any kind of surveillance by Seattle Police?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what this does is it doesn't restrict particular surveillance technologies. It sets up a process by which the city council not only has the ability to approve new surveillance technologies but that are being implemented, but will also take a backward look and on a month-to-month basis approve technologies that the city already has that fall into this category of powerful surveillance technologies, but that were never daylighted when they were first acquired.
Also with us is an opponent of this law, former assistant director of the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division, Ron Hosko. Welcome, Ron.
Hey, good to be with you today.
Ron is president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund as well. And Ron, what would be wrong with giving the public a chance to approve surveillance methods that affect them or could affect them?
Well, I think from my experience, there would be many problems with it. First and foremost, we live in a society where many of the law enforcement techniques that are used by federal, state, local law enforcement are exposed to public view over time, typically in court filings or in court hearings. And the reality about crime fighting is simple. This is, you know, very often a cat and mouse game. And as new techniques are developed by law enforcement, they're exposed to the criminal element in our societies. And the criminal element adapts. They evolve. They learn what techniques caught them the last time, or caught their friends in who may be part of a conspiracy, and they evolve. They change their tactics to try to inflict their harm on society in new and inventive ways. And I think exposing those techniques, particularly sophisticated surveillance techniques, to the public is tantamount to showing your cards about how law enforcement works and how they might keep a step ahead of the criminal element in our country and certainly in Seattle.
Shankar, does the city of Seattle have some way to keep the bad guys from learning about surveillance through the public process, or do you just think that's not a problem?
Well, the first thing I would say is that the Seattle Police Department supported this ordinance. We worked very closely with them to make sure that we were including language that really referred to the public's ability to talk about how the technology was used, but wasn't necessarily revealing the intimate details of the specs of that particular technology, for example. And so, you know, I think the approach that SPD has taken and many other police departments are swinging around to as well is an approach that centers community trust. We often have a debate where community trust is an afterthought. And these surveillance techniques are acquired sometimes, again, without even the higher-ups in a particular department knowing about it. There'll be aggressive marketing by vendors of the technology who might provide subsidies. The federal government might provide subsidies, and the agency might then say, well, hey, it's free to use. Let's go ahead and implement it and see what happens. Unfortunately, what that doesn't consider is the impact on public trust. Will people, you know, particularly crime victims, witnesses, immigrants and refugees, other vulnerable communities, be reluctant to interact with police departments if they believe they're being surveilled and if they don't know how that information is being used? So I think the approach that this bill puts out is a very rational one, where we're not revealing particular secrets of the technology to the bad guys, but we certainly are talking about how this technology might be implemented in a way that also preserves public trust and civil liberties.
Ron, isn't that an upside of such a law like this in Seattle, public trust of their police department?
Well, public trust is really a critical aspect of any law enforcement agency's engagement with the public. And I would, you know, cautiously agree with, you know, reasonable, responsible steps to build that public trust. That's often done with police leadership. And to me, one of the more important facets of a law like this, or a consideration like this, would be, what are the policy discussions behind it and how are they communicated to the citizens, rather than showing off a piece of innovative technology and sharing how it might be utilized in a anti-crime environment. Talk to me about, from a, you know, build trust with the police chief and with police commanders that are developing policies that are properly informed. They're informed not just by the law of land, according to the Supreme Court, but by people within the city solicitor's office or the district attorney's office, prosecutors who have a clear understanding of what the law expects, what it requires, and building appropriate policies and policy judgments and sharing that with the public, rather than showing off your shiny new tools so that dedicated criminals can evade them.
Shankar, you used the example early on of automated license plate readers and how in New York those were used to track people coming from mosques. In Seattle, how would a situation like that play out under this law? I mean, there's approving a technology, but then there's looking over the police department's shoulder at how it's specifically being used day in and day out. How does that work?
Well, I think ALPRs is actually a great example, because when the council talked about ALPRs as
these are the license plate readers.
Yes, these are the license plate readers. One council member, Mike O'Brien, said, well, when we had this debate, all we really talked about was parking enforcement. And so what we know is that SPD has a database of ALPR location data, which amounts to a massive trove of location data on everyone who drives in the city, because these devices are quite ubiquitous. And this database is piling up with no restriction on who can use it and how. And, you know, in addition to, for example, a smart criminal who might get these records through a public records request and, say, determine when you're home or not, it also is potentially abusable by the federal government. Now, Seattle has declared itself a welcoming city and has said that they don't want to participate in federal immigration enforcement. And yet, here's a trove of location data which could be used for that purpose. So what I would say is that, you know, when ALPRs come up for city council approval, as they now must, we should put those things on the table. We should talk about, What are they currently being used for? Are there useful applications, for example, for finding stolen vehicles? How long do you really need the data? All right, a stolen vehicle match on a hot list, for example, really only takes an immediate match when that license plate is recorded, but 2 or 3 days later, it's not really as important, and certainly 30 days later, the value of that data has gone down a lot. So why are we keeping it?
And beyond license plate readers, Ron Hosko, technology changes, software changes, drone technology, GPS trackers. What is your answer to the question of the use of surveillance beyond trust the police? How do we keep surveillers in check?
Well, you can, as my organization, my former organization worked hard to do, it's trust but verify. And so within the FBI, we used the full range of surveillance and other techniques, some of which were debated in Congress, not the details of a particular surveillance platform, but tools and techniques that the FBI uses. We had internal compliance measures. I was an inspector at one point in my career. We had internal audit units. We had an inspector general, all of which, you know, had among their requirements, their expectations, that they were looking at the organization, its efficiency, its effectiveness, ways to improve both of those, and compliance against existing policy and law. And those reviews, in my estimation, were robust. People were from time to time sanctioned with suspension or termination for violating the expectations of the organization. Divisions of the FBI and leadership might be criticized for, you know, lack of clarity in the execution of a policy or the execution of a policy. So there were robust internal and external mechanisms to do to look over the shoulder of the police department and make sure that they are working as they had agreed to.
Okay, well, we'll pause it there and keep watching the watchers as this brand new law plays out. Ron Hosko, former assistant director of the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. Ron, thank you.
Great to be with you.
And from the ACLU of Washington, the Technology and Liberty Project Director, Shankar Narayan, as I say, we'll watch how this law actually gets implemented. I imagine the ACLU is going to do the same.
We will be watching as well. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in and telling us about it.